Okay, all right, let's get going here. Here, in case you missed it, 60 seconds of the alleged commander-in-chief talking about his Jared Kushner warp drive vaccine that he says will be out by the end of the year.
I think we're going to have a vaccine by the end of the year. We're doing very well with a vaccine. And I will tell you something. I just literally left a meeting. We're mobilizing our military and other forces, but we're mobilizing our military on the basis that we do have a vaccine. You know, it's a massive job to give this vaccine. Our military is now being mobilized. So at the end of the year, we're going to be able to give it to a lot of people very, very rapidly.
Henry, that means the several military will come to your door and offer to give you a vaccine. That's very thoughtful of the president, isn't it?
Yeah, it's in response to Rick Bright's testimony today, and he says they're nowhere near ready. Even if they had a vaccine tomorrow, they couldn't deliver it because they haven't really made purchases and preparation for actually getting the vaccine into vials so it can be shipped anywhere. So, I mean, it wasn't unexpected, but it was confirmation that these guys are totally clueless. They don't have the foggiest idea of what they're doing. They're total screw-ups. He warned them that they didn't have N95 masks. He warned them that they didn't have swabs. And he warned them that even if they had a vaccine, they don't have any means of distributing it. And they just blew him off on all those. And he did this in January. these guys are fools. They didn't want to do testing because it might spook the public. So they wanted to limit testing so they would limit positives. And this whole scenario where, you know, the CDC was going to do it, and they sent it out, and they got contaminated, and they had to recall it, and they had to replace it. And it all seemed to take an awful long time. I mean, even if they did have a problem with contamination, this test, the sequence was released January 11th. That's all you need to make a PCR kit, as long as you have the sequence. You just have to make primers. You can make primers, you know, with the chemicals off the shelf. Not a problem to make a primer. It's not a problem to do a PCR test. And it went on for months without having a test that you could get a result without sending it to the CDC and having a delay. And I wouldn't be at all surprised if this whole delay in testing was either, you know, deliberate or was just, well, they knew they didn't really want to do that much testing anyway, so it wasn't as high a priority as it should have been, and that his desire to keep the numbers down.
It's all about reelection. This whole thing has been about his reelection, every bit of it from the beginning.
Right. But he is anti-science. He's taking a pandemic and he's manipulating it for his reelection. So he doesn't really care how many people die because now he's trying to get the CDC to change the definition of a fatality so that it'll lower the numbers. He doesn't want them to include the ones that were.
I don't know this. Yeah. What is he trying to do? Explain
he's
that a little bit more.
Well, it's up to 87,000 dead. It'll be 90,000 this week. It'll be 100,000 next week. And those don't sound good. So he's going to lower the number by telling the CDC to change their definition. They used to divide them up where they had confirmed cases, mm-hmm. where they confirmed it with a PCR test, and they have probable cases, which were excessive deaths that almost certainly were due to the virus, but they died before they got a chance to be tested. Mm-hmm. And they were put in the probable category. And then a month or two ago, the CDC had plenty of data, not just from them, but from other countries in Europe. They have multiple locations in the U.S. in addition to New York. And they knew that when they had outbreaks of the virus, they had excessive deaths. And a lot of those were emergency, and they were heart attacks, and they got picked up and they died before they could get them to the hospital, yeah. and they didn't bother testing them. But they knew that the calls coincided with the outbreaks, and they knew what an average death rate was, or what an average call rate was for heart attacks, and they knew that, it's possible that if they had 200 people and they knew 180 of them were from the virus, they weren't exactly sure which 180 out of the 200 were from the virus, but they knew that 180 of them were from the virus. And so they had 180 probables that they then combined and put them in as in the total. So instead of having two numbers, they would just combine those numbers. So Trump wants them to get rid of the probables and not count the probables, to lower the number of deaths, when anybody is paying attention knows that the number that is reported, it's a significant undercount, even when they make these adjustments, because there's still other ones that are dying that don't get tested. And the latest news flash that just came out today, which is a follow-up on a story I was going to talk about yesterday and didn't get to it, their testing is garbage still. And the test that's the worst is the one that they use in the White House. And today,
wow.
The FDA issued an alert.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. Thanks for sending it over. Yeah, this is wild.
It's junk. 48% of the time, it gives a false negative. And this came out in a preprint yesterday, and that's what I was trying to talk about yesterday, but didn't get to it. I actually attached it to the thread that talked about Katie Miller, who basically tested negative when she was symptomatic. If uh-huh. you recall, she had gone to the
well, then something happened. The president said something happened.
Right. She was coughing. She wasn't wearing a mask. She actually was coughing in the face of the reporter that actually wrote it up in the Las Vegas Review. And they had a picture of her. I mean, everybody in the picture was wearing a mask except for Katie Miller. And the reporter was literally right in front of her when she was home, this little press gaggle, which was on Thursday. And then the reports were that on Thursday, she was tested at the White House and she was negative. And then, as you said, something happened. And all of a sudden on Friday, she was positive. And I had sent the reports indicating that what's significant is that she was tested negative, even though she was already symptomatic. So she already was coughing. And in spite of coughing, they still mm-hmm. came up with a negative on their test. And so the question was, how good was that test? And then yesterday, a preprint came out from a group in New York. And this is one of the issues that your listeners might not really appreciate, but Trump came out and said, oh, we've got all these, all these machines that are sitting there that are really being underutilized, that you can run the test. That they have this point of sale kind of test mm-hmm. that's done by Abbott. And, these machines are all over the country and they're really not being used that much. Well, part of the reason they're not being used that much is labs don't like keep changing how they're going to do the test, because they like to have consistent results, and they like to compare the results they generate today to the results they generated a week ago or a month ago. And they want to be able to compare it to what other labs are doing. And if everybody's using a different test and they've got different sensitivities on that, and the sensitivities change on what they're using, then they're going to have all kind of results. Higher seems to have gotten lower. Is it lower because we changed the test, or is it lower because there aren't that many cases? So that's why labs don't like to say, well, we've been using this test for the last 2 months, and they don't have any swabs. So I guess we got to go ahead and do another test with this other machine that we have no experience with. And we're going to just go ahead and assume that it's going to give us the same results.
What a catastrophe. So, what a disaster.
So this lab in New York had a PCR test that they've been using, and it gives results in 45 minutes. So in 45 minutes, you can run it and find out whether it's negative or positive. You know, Abbott came out with this lab, and, you know, Trump was pushing it, saying, you know, you can do this. It's point, you know, you can get your results. That they advertise it in 5 to 13 minutes. 13 minutes, I guess, if it's negative, they want you to, you know, run it for 13 minutes to make sure it's negative. Yeah. And if it's positive, you can get the results as quick as 5 minutes. And so they decided, well, they'll see how this new test looks compared to their old test. And so they took samples that were positive on their old test, ran it in the Abbott new test, and 48% of the samples that were positive on their old test were negative on the Abbott test. And
disaster.
So they wrote this up as a preprint, and they came out and said, you know, if they put it in the transport, that I think it was 30% were false negatives, were negative. And if they basically just took the swab and immediately tested it, then 48% were negative that had been positive on the other one. And that's more of a real life type of a situation. And Abbott came and said, well, maybe they're doing the test wrong. You know, our test is 98% accurate.
But nobody's accountable.
It may be 98%, but that may be using a sample just loaded with virus. So if you've got a ton of virus, 98% of the time it'll say it's positive. But if you've got a average amount of virus, or if you've got
medium viral load,
end,
light viral load,
all of a sudden everything's negative. And so, you know, I had heard there was a 15% false
That's
negative, which is high.
That's what I heard.
Which is high.
Yeah.
And,
you mentioned
and
that.
And then this paper comes out and says 48% is negative on the samples that were positive on this 48-minute PCR test. So, I mean, theoretically, they should give the same results. It's essentially the same thing. The only difference is the other tests, you incubate it a little bit longer. You end up incubating for 45 minutes instead of 5 minutes. And it's a reliable result. I mean, they've checked that by sequencing it. I mean, it gives it a positive. They can isolate the virus, or they can at least amplify the virus so they can get a sequence out of those samples. So their positives are true positives. They can confirm it with sequence data. And they take a sample that they know is positive, and 48% of the time, this assay gives it a negative. And so word started to spread. It kind of, the paper came out yesterday. There were a few that started talking about it on Twitter yesterday, and then it started to make the news today. And they had to respond to it, so they responded today. And then tonight, the FDA put out a warning saying they're investigating false negatives on this assay by Abbott, you know, point of sale. I don't know the exact name, but it's the same assay that they use at the White House. this is what they want. Oh, they get the results in 5 minutes. They do this all the time. They don't have to do right. this deep nasal swab. They go and they take the shallower one. Trump likes it because he didn't like the nasal pharyngeal swab because it was real. You know, it was
uncomfortable,
painful, and it is.
Yeah.
Right. It's uncomfortable. Yeah. And this one's not. They get tested every day. And they're negative every day. But that doesn't really mean a whole lot. If they've got a light viral load, they're going to be negative on this test. And this is right in line with what he likes. He said it today. He came to Pennsylvania today.
He did a PPE lab. I mean, a factory.
Right.
Touring.
Right. And he's the only one not wearing a mask.
I told you, you'll never see him in a mask.
Right,
never
right,
happened.
Right. I know. He doesn't think he looks good. So he doesn't have the mask. Everybody else has the mask. And says, you know, these tests, you know, they're not really all they're made up to be. Because. You know, people say, well, the United States has the highest number of cases in the world. And he says, but that's because we do the most testing in the world. That if we did fewer tests, we would have fewer cases. And he said, you know, it's just the way it works. You know, if you don't test, you don't get a positive.
Didn't we go through that scenario once before somewhere?
Right. He said that today. So
this is
how he thinks. He doesn't really care about the patients. He doesn't really care about the pandemic. All he cares about is the number that he can brag about. And he can't brag about 80,000 or 85,000. Now it's 87,000 or 90,000 or 100,000. Having 100,000 dead people, dead Americans, is not something to say, hey, I made America number USA.
He did try to say
one.
Earlier, right. Remember what he said? He started to use the word only. Only 50,000 dead are in that. Yeah. We'll hold it down to only 50,000 dead. Something
right.
on that.
Right.
So that's how he's trying to qualify it. This is really an astonishing right. thing to see unfold. It really is. It just, it's hard to believe.
Yeah, well, he's not beating the record now. I mean, what he said before was that, you know, if he didn't do the lockdown, the chances would be like between 1.1 and 2.4 million Americans' deaths.
Right.
And that if they did do the lockdown, they would get it in the neighborhood of 100 to 200,000. So he made it sound like, well, the 100 or 200,000 dead is good.
That's a win.
It could be.
That's a big win.
Right. That's a win.
Yeah.
So that was his target. His target mm-hmm. was to get it into 100 to 200,000. And then he goes and he says, oh, we can do better than that. Well, I think we can get it below 100,000. And then the company, you know, University of Washington that was doing the analysis then came out with a new projection because they thought it was good compliance with the lockdown. So they said, well, you know, it looks good. The compliance is good. We're revising the number to 60,000. And then Trump, of course, said, well, we can beat that. we can probably get it down to 50,000.
Uh-huh.
And he says it when it was at like 45,000. And there were 2,000 cases a day being reported. 2,000 deaths, I should
deaths.
Say, a day.
He couldn't do the math.
So it was clear.
5 days.
It was clear when he said it, yeah, he had like 2 or 3 days before he was going to be at 50,000. So he wasn't. There was no way. I mean, it was still April. Even by his projection of being gone in April, it wouldn't make it. Because he said this and it was still April. And it was 2,000 cases a day. And deaths are a trailing indicator. So, you know, even if nobody got infected the day he made his announcement, he would have still got the 50,000 dead because it only took 3 days. And those people that were dying, they're already in the hospital. They're already on a ventilator. And it's just a matter of time before they right. they get to 50,000. So all he's worried about is the number. I mean, he wanted to leave the cases on the boat, on the cruise.
Remember that, ladies and gentlemen?
Took them off, for no fault of mine, we would double our numbers.
Remember, I hope all of you remember that.
We brought those aboard, right? So he goes and it comes out of his mouth. I mean, he actually admits it. He doesn't realize what he's admitting when he admits it, but he's on tape. There's a live mic, and he says it. I mean, and it's clear what he's thinking because he says what he's thinking. And all he's worried about is the number and how he looks and how it's going to affect his election. And so now he's shifting over. You know, he did this Clorox thing. And so he's not holding the press. You know, the task force isn't really having their regular daily
meetings
anymore.
What task force? Which one?
Right, right.
Which task force?
Right. The one that it doesn't have any members because they're all in quarantine.
That's true.
Because the people they're exposed to either are positive or took a test that's only 48% false negatives.
Well, everyone's watching to see if he coughs or anything. One symptom and they're going to be on it.
Well,
we'll see.
Well, Pence is separated. Pence doesn't even go into the White House now.
We don't see Pence.
He's in the building across the street, right? When he comes to work, his work has nothing to do with the White House. And so they say, well, we got to keep them separate because if they both end up getting incapacitated, then Nancy will be in charge.
Right.
So they can't lose them both simultaneously. So they got to be in separate buildings now. And what they really have to be is away from Pence because he's got the virus and they know he's got the virus. And, you know, and they can hang their hat off. Hat on is an FDA recalls test.
This is astonishing.
It gives them false negatives. And that's their science. That's perfect. I mean, that's the type of science they do. It's false results. They depend upon it. And then they use it to basically go around the country infecting people because they're infected, and they won't wear
we took a test and it says
we're good to go.
What really bothers me is when the guy lies, and he lies all the time, he then comes back the next day and says something to try to mitigate the lie. Well, I didn't say that. You took it out of context. I didn't mean that. You're not quoting me correctly. And it's on video. It's all recorded. How many times does that happen? And backing further away from all this, in the history of modern civilization, has there ever been a more incompetent effort to manage a pandemic? I'm not sure if 1918 was worse than this. I really don't know. This is just bad. It's worse than
1918. 1918 was bad because A, they didn't have antibiotics, and B, a lot of people got secondary infections, and C,
secondaries. Yes, I understand. But the basic idea started
during a war, and it ended the war. The reason World War One ended is that they couldn't control the pandemic, and they had, you know, these troops were going in ships, and they were tight quarters, and they were basically transporting the virus all over the world, and it was just getting worse, and so they couldn't afford to continue, because all of the troops would end up, you know, in hospitals or dead.
Correct. I don't want to change the subject completely, but we're beginning to see very severe indications of internal breakdown in the infrastructure of the society and the economy now. Coronavirus, trucking and rail freight collapses in the U.S. The trucking and rail business is collapsing. This is not good. If you bought it, a truck brought it. Remember that. The hope is that April was the bottom, that volumes can't fall further, that factories and retailers will gradually open and that consumers and business will buy these goods and the trucks and railroads will roll. That's the hope. But that's not what's happening. It collapsed 23% in April, truck, rail, and air, 23% collapse in April. And it's now down 25% from April. So what we're seeing here is really the beginning of something that is unprecedented. This is going to be worse than the Great Depression, Henry. And right. It's just right. In the hands of idiots. There's nothing being done
right.
To address this.
Nothing. And the problem is, they think that all they got to do is say, "Oh, everybody go back to work. Don't worry about the virus out there. You know, we need to get the economy rolling again." And people aren't going to go back to work. And it's the same thing with the schools. You know, we're going to open up.
One third of employees aren't coming back to work already. That's what we're hearing. One third. They don't want to. They're making more money on unemployment. Why the hell do they want to go back to work?
Right, but the ones that do have a job are coming back because they don't want the virus.
And those are the ones I'm talking about. That too. Yeah.
Well, some of them don't want to come back because they're making more than they had.
No, they're afraid. It is the baseline is that it's a fear-driven absence from work. That's what it is.
Right.
They're afraid.
Right. And that's why you can't just kind of say, okay, time to go back to work. It's not a problem because the virus is still there. And the whole idea of this lockdown and easing off was that you're going to ease off after you've got the virus under control. So the virus numbers are low enough so that if you go back to work, number one, you're probably not going to get infected because there isn't that much virus around. And number two, if you do get infected, there'll be enough contact tracing that they can go ahead and manage the virus. So it isn't going to spread. They're going to identify the contacts. They're going to make sure the contacts, I mean, the quarantine's going to be a home quarantine, and I have people that call them up every day or a couple times a day, and they have them take their temperature, and they find out how they're feeling, and they kind of, make sure that the ones that are supposed to be in the home for 14 days in quarantine really are at home and being quarantined. So they're gonna limit the ability of the virus to spread, even if somebody does get infected. And the problem is that if they go back to work or go back to their normal activities, or they're not even normal, if they go back to modified activities to limit the spread, that the numbers will be low enough that they'll be able to get a handle on it. If the numbers are high, then it's going to get out of control because it's already somewhat out of control in these industries, with the pork or the beef or the poultry processing houses. They've already got outbreaks and there's plenty of virus there, and there's already virus spilling over into the community. And then if the community is basically moving about more, then they're going to end up spreading it. And a lot of these are in rural areas where they don't really have the hospitals and the beds or the ventilators to basically support
significant
outbreak.
It's not just the workers. They're losing federal meat inspectors by the hundreds. They're going out sick with this stuff. So you can't operate.
The problem is it's an unsafe environment. I mean, the virus spreads, and I gave you the story where the companies are giving bonuses so that you don't miss any work, which is just another way of saying you got a little bit of a cough, it's okay. We need you here. It's a short term fix for a chronic problem, and so they get them to come back to work, and they just bring the virus, and so they're there for the day, mm-hmm. but they put the virus. There's no people that are infected, and they're just going to cause a problem, you know, 5 days down the road. So it's not really infected.
All right.
It's a temporary.
I get it. I have an email question here for you about the sequence of this particular coronavirus. When was that sequence? You said the 11th, January 11th, the sequence was released formally?
Correct.
And the full sequence, I don't know how many genes there are in it, but the full sequence was known on January
11th. 30,000 nucleotides, yeah.
Okay, and that was 100% released on the 11th. We did our first program here on this on January the 8th, so we were ahead of that.
They had already given some details. I mean, at the end of the year, December 31st, they said it was a coronavirus, and they had like 4% coverage. 4% coverage would be about 120 nucleotides. 120 nucleotides, you can put that in the gene bank, and you can pretty much know what it's most closely related to. What you can't say is exactly what the percent identity is, because that can move around at different places on the genome. So you might have a region that's 70% identical in one gene, and it might be 80% in another. It might be 60 in another. So you can't really give a good number on what the whole genome is relative to what's already known, but you can say it's a coronavirus, and you can say it's most closely related to the SARS coronavirus. So they knew that at the end of December. Hmm. They had that information. And then within, you know, a week and a half or so, the full sequence was released. So, and that's what you need to make these kits. So, You don't actually need the virus. You just need the sequence. So if you have the sequence, you can compare that sequence to other known sequences. You can pick regions that are unique to this virus and won't cross-react with the other ones that you know about. And you can make probes that are going to be specific for this virus. So if you get a positive, and you'll generally take a couple of different regions that are specific. So it's like, you know, two or three different target regions. And if you get a positive in two or three, then you know it's this virus. And if you recall, when some of the early testing was done, some of these countries like the Philippines, they didn't really have a specific kit. You could buy them. They were being made in Germany. They were being distributed through WHO. And I don't know, for whatever reason, the Philippines were just relying upon a pan coronavirus. So they had a region that was just the opposite. They had a conserved region. So if they got a positive, it was positive for a coronavirus, but it might not be this coronavirus. It could be a couple other cold viruses that have been known for a long time, a couple of different newer viruses that were mostly in children, and they started getting positives, and they were in children. And the fact that their positives were in children suggested that they've got one of the other viruses. They've got one of the other coronaviruses, which is commonly found in children. And when they send that sample out to a lab that had the specific test, they would tell them it's a false positive. I mean, it was a true positive. The child was infected with a coronavirus, but it was infected with this NL63 or HKU1. Those were the two newer ones that are predominantly found in children. And they would be positive in the Philippines, and they would send it out. They would come back and say it's a false positive. It's a positive for another coronavirus, not the one that everybody's worried about. The test was available shortly thereafter. And if you recall, initially, China said that they had 59 positives, and that was based on symptoms. And they were supposed, theoretically, it turned out they weren't all, but, you know, they were talking about them being linked to the seafood market. And then once they got the test, they revised it. They said of the 59 they had, only 41 were positive on the test. So they lowered the number to 41. And then if you recall, shortly thereafter, like within a week or two, they ended up identifying positives in Thailand and then in Japan. And once they had those two, and by the time they wrote the paper, there were three already. There was another one in Thailand, I think. They knew that there were like 10,000 people infected in China because the metropolitan area for Wuhan had 11 million people, or Wuhan itself was 11 million. The metropolitan area was 19 million. And, you know, so if you were picking up a couple positives, that means that there had to be like 10,000 people infected. And so as soon as that happened, anybody paying attention, and this was in January, this was fairly early in January, knew that there were literally thousands of cases in China, in Wuhan. And if there were thousands of cases in Wuhan, either they didn't all come from that seafood market, or they initially came from that market and they were spreading very, very quickly. And in all likelihood, they would have been before that seafood market. And then subsequently, they found one as early as December 1st. That was before the seafood market. And so the virus was circulating. It could be that there was an outbreak in the seafood market, but that's not where it started. It was somewhere probably in Wuhan, but it wasn't directly tied to the seafood market. That might have amplified it, and they might have had, you know, an outbreak there. Somebody at the market might have been infected, and then they infected other people at the market.
Right.
But it
right.
was clear it was transmitting human to human. So it was clear it was human to human. It was clear it was a virus related to SARS. It was clear that SARS had super spreaders, and it kind of spread from most of it outside of mainland China was due to one person. And they ended up, you know, getting these outbreaks in multiple countries. It was in Toronto, and it was in Singapore, and it was in Hanoi, and then it was in Hong Kong, and then it went to Taiwan, and that's where most of the cases were, other than, you know, Guangdong province and nearby. So it was clear that in the past it had spread. It had been an epidemic. It wasn't a pandemic. And if the numbers went up that quickly in Wuhan, and then they were closing down Wuhan. So you knew that's all public information. And that left zero doubt that there was a major problem. And then Rick Bright knew in January that there was a major problem.
Yeah.
And he
sure
went
did.
And he looked to see how available N95 masks were, and he found out that you couldn't get them anywhere. And he raised that as an issue. We're not going to have PPEs. And then the same thing happened with the swabs. He knew that there was going to be a shortage of swabs. And he knows that you can't do the assay without a swab. You basically need each component to actually get a test, a complete test. And he raised the issue about swabs, and they just blew him off. And then he raised the issue about a vaccine. And he said, you know, even if you get a vaccine, you need to vaccinate everybody in the United States. But if you're going to get the virus out of control, under control, you need to vaccinate everybody in the world. You need to get the virus under control, because if you just vaccinated in the U.S., not everybody's going to get vaccinated. Not everybody's going to, you know, get as high a titer as they would like to be fully vaccinated. That's if everything's going fine. You can't have the virus all over the place and assume that you just vaccinate, you know, 300 million people in the United States and you're all set. You really need to be able to vaccinate.
The bottom line on this is the tragic politicization of a total pandemic. Now we've got, let's just take a sidestep for a moment. You got Donald Trump. And as you said, if you want one guy to completely catastrophically fail with the pandemic, it would be Donald Trump. The other guy on the other side of the aisle, Joe Biden, is clearly struggling. He's got dementia. He's senile. They tried again today to put him in a virtual round table. And just as a little bit of a different flavor here in the conversation, listen to Biden here today. This is pretty grim. And he's the presumptive nominee of the Democrat Party. Here we go. Creepy Joe again.
This is not a moment for excuses or deflections or blame game. We're in the middle of a pandemic that had cost us more than 85,000 jobs as of today. Lives of millions of people. Millions of jobs, you know, and we're in a position where, you know, we just got new unemployment insurance this morning, numbers, 36.5 million claims since this crisis began.
He's not a well man. He really should be in Shady Acres getting care. It's just really bad. And it's gone on and on, and it's only going to obviously get worse. I'm not even sure if some of the words he said were actually words. He's making sounds. But this is the state of politics in America right now. What do we have? We've got no leadership. Yeah. We've got no competence. We have raw retribution from Trump. Oh, if somebody says the wrong word, they're gone. Rick Bright, most recent example.
Right.
How many people has Trump ejected from his administration? It's a long list now.
Well, that's a problem. I mean, half the guys in his administration have already been recycled. They've already had another position, and they're moved over to kind of fill a position because he can't fill them. And Rick Bright did talk about how bad the potential was and the fall.
He knew. He saw the disaster coming. He saw the whole thing, and all he did was do his job.
And he said that. Yeah, he said there has to be a national program. Here to give you an idea how bad it is. He went and he said that we need 3.2 billion with a B and 95 masks.
Right.
So Trump has got a contract to make 300 million. In many months from 3M.
Right.
So that's only 10% of what he needs. So 2 months.
That's why you still see healthcare workers demonstrating. We got no protection. We got no PPE.
Right.
That's why.
Right.
There was never an effort made to order the proper number of masks. Never.
And he gave what the solution was for the mask. When he said that we need all of these N95 masks, and they said, well, we'll just change the regulations, and we'll tell the general public that they don't need N95 masks. They can
just get a
they
scarf.
Can just wear cloth masks, and that'll knock down the demand. And he said, yeah, you got to be kidding me. And that's exactly what they did. They told the general public, you don't need an N95 mask. You can use a handkerchief or a scarf. You can use a scarf for a mask. And that's just to prevent you from infecting somebody else that doesn't give you any protection. And so the reason you don't need a 95 mask isn't because you don't need protection. It's because they don't have any. And if the general public takes the N95 mask, then the first responders and the nurses and the doctors who actually do need them more because they have a higher exposure aren't going to have enough. And,
nope.
And so, and the thing that's so stupid is making a mask is not, it's not rocket science. It's not like this is a new invention. You can make billions of masks. You just have to go and say, this is the order. You need to do, you know, 300 million this month and 300 million next month. And if you can't do it, then we'll get five different companies that'll do it. And the five will make those. I mean, with World War II, they stopped making cars and started making tanks. It's a lot harder to make a tank than to make a mask. I mean, the fact
it was embarrassing. It went on week after week.
There's a shortage of PPEs, and it's going to be worse in the fall. And his solution is saying it's not going to happen. Just like it's going to go away in April, it's not going to happen in the fall. And I don't know, somebody asked me, I think one of the guys on the paper that you know, with the hydroxychloroquine, he came out and he said, there isn't going to be anything in the fall. There isn't going to be a pandemic in the fall. And I said, yeah, what's he basing that on? I mean, every scientist I know says that it's going to be back in the fall. You know, if it goes down in the summer, it says the only way it won't be back in the fall is if it never leaves.
It doesn't go down in the summer.
Right, right. And if it goes down in the summer, it's going to go up in the fall. And this guy is saying, well, the reason it's not going to come back in the fall is that the pandemic of 1918, it really didn't start in the spring. It started in the summer, and then it got worse in the fall, and there wasn't a second wave. There was only one wave. Now, everything I've seen indicates that there was an outbreak in the spring, but it was very mild, and it was hardly even noticed, and then it came back in the fall. So the spring was kind of a herald wave. The virus was there. There were some people getting infected. And the bottom line is, in 1918, they didn't even know what a virus was. They didn't know that the flu was caused by a flu virus.
They didn't know. They just knew, they didn't understand.
They just knew what kind of symptoms people had, and there was something that kind of comes around each year. And if it was a mild version in the spring, I mean, there was a war going on. They weren't going to be concerned about some sniffles. If you didn't get pneumonia and you were in the hospital and you had a little something at the end of the flu season in the spring, so what? You know, and who knows what you had? They had no diagnosis. There was nothing to diagnose it. And so whether it just flew under the radar. And then he said, you know, there wasn't a second wave. There was only one wave. And the epidemics come and go. They go and they come, and then all of a sudden they're gone, you know. And I don't know if it was a translation issue or all he talked about was epidemics. And it was like he doesn't know the difference between an epidemic and a pandemic. An epidemic is localized.
Mm-hmm.
And a localized already indicates that it wasn't virulent enough or transmissible enough to become a pandemic. It was only in a local area. So right. You're already looking at something that isn't necessarily expected to be around forever. Because if it was going to be around forever, it would spread and it wouldn't be localized. And as far as pandemics are concerned, they didn't go away. I mean, after 1918, there was a pandemic in 1957. That was H2N2. H2N2 started in 57, and it didn't go away until there was another pandemic in 1968. And in 1968, the N2 hung around, but the H2 got replaced by H3, and it became H3N2. And then H2N2 went away because it got replaced by H3N2 in 1968. Mm-hmm. And H3N2 is still around today. It started in 68 and it's still circulating in 2020. And then there was a new pandemic in 2009 that was swine. And that one definitely was milder in the spring and definitely was worse in the fall. And that replaced H1N1 seasonal. H1N1 seasonal is gone. It's replaced with swine. And swine is around today in 2020. So there's nothing about pandemics going away. The only time a pandemic goes away is when it gets replaced by another pandemic. So there's nothing to say that this current COVID-19 is going anywhere.
It's going away.
It's all over the world, and it might go down in the summer, but the summer is winter in the southern hemisphere, and it will be here in the fall, guaranteed. But anyway, tomorrow I'll go over a little bit more about his testimony, but his testimony was unbelievable. You know, he had the Fifth Street drug dealers. They were trying to redo hydroxychloroquine
again.
And say, well, yeah, all over again. Like there wasn't any results. Like this is a miracle drug, and that
wow.
You know it should have been approved. It should have been distributed. Da 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 da. And there's still no trial that shows it works. There's a trial that shows it kills people, but there isn't one that shows it works.
And they were
repeating this, so we'll go over a little bit more tomorrow. But
All right.
We'll be at 90,000 this week and 100,000 next week.
Okay. Thank you very much, Henry. Have a good night. We'll talk to you tomorrow night. All right.
Okay. Sounds good. Take care.
Okay. All right. And we will be back with you in 21 hours. It's really crazy out there. We'll keep tabs of it. Please look at that top story and headlines if you haven't, if you're just joining us now. Spread that around. That panel that was taken out of that box is very, very concerning. All right, we'll be right back. 21 hours. See you then.